John, you hear me? There you are.
Here? He's
Yeah.
must be a function of age. I'm talking and I realize that my microphone is on my desk and not in my head.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Yeah. Well, I was trying to, connect, and it always goes to my podcast instead of. Like the analytics of my podcast. Instead, I don't know.
I don't know.
Takes me a minute. Hi, how are you?
I'm good. I'm really good. I've spent the morning with Erwin Rudolph Joseph Alexander Schrodinger and Paul Dirac, and I did that along with Roger Penrose because I woke up with this epiphany this morning. I guess that's what happens when you stare too long at the sun. That me following you and the Trinity at all around for a period of time has an influence on the theory of wave mechanics, and it really does. And I'm not going to turn Floppy Feathers into a science book, but I'm thinking I might dedicate the book to Schrodinger.
Really?
Because it's amazing how in the Trinity we have people who are alive and dead that are crossing over. And of course, his famous example of the impossibility is of the alive and dead cat at the same time in his famous box experiment. The point he was trying to make was that you can't do that. I think we've just figured out that that you can. If you look at the Trinity, we have people who are alive, people who are dead, people who are from someplace else, neither alive or dead, and someone who's dead, who's communicating with everybody. So I think that in terms of perception at least, that's just, I mean, I don't want to bore you with those kind of details, but yeah, it was fun.
You're not boring me. You never bore me. No, I think the story gets more fascinating as time goes on.
It does, because it's, I mean, I can't help but relate it in some ways to metaphysics or physics, or wave particle theory, or all the stuff that these guys. I mean, it was Gödel who drove himself crazy trying to figure out why mathematics wouldn't solve everything. There are some problems in physics and science that mathematics can't solve. Well, if you believe that mathematics is the structure of the universe, and if you figure out that mathematics can't solve something, that leads off into consciousness, or into the mystery of consciousness at least. And I think that we've done exactly that in a different way with the second book in the series, Floppy Feathers. I believe that we have done that, and I think we did it rather handsomely. So,
It's very generous of you to say we.
well,
You. It's brilliant and it's all yours.
anyway, thank you.
It is. It just, it's one thing following the story the first time through, as you're just like, hey, what comes next? What comes next? Like, you're just, but then after you read it all, you're just like, holy
Yeah,
shit.
right.
Yeah, you have to go back and I don't know, just love it all over again. Really
Well,
just
it's
look up and look around.
it's the story of you, as we know, or as people will learn. It's your story. I wrote it, but it's your story. And I wrote it through the various I wrote it through the discipline that Chirac and Schrodinger are talking about. That's how the whole thing became able to become. It's almost like, I don't know, it's like the revelations of the first philosophers. I am who am. You are who are. I was able to spot that as I because I am trained to spot stuff like that, and I was able to spot that in you, and I was able to connect to it, and I was able to write about it, and at the time I didn't realize I was aligning up with guys like Dirac, Schrodinger, and Penrose. Not that I'm agreeing with them, but that I'm going using their various conscious process to examine a process in the universe, which is you, and you're playing with their theory. And you're pulling it off. I mean, you're like a demonstrated value of the Schrodinger equation. It's amazing. But what I don't want to do, and here's the problem, I do not want to write a foreword to the book that makes people believe it's a book of science, because that will, that'll get rid of most of the market. Like, who wants to read this? So that's why I was thinking about maybe dedicating it to those guys in a nice, simple way, and maybe a brief introduction. But I'll think about it. I'll let you know. I'm thinking about it.
Yeah, that's something to think about, especially the way Dill's Angel Destiny left off. I noticed that in the review that somebody left you. I don't know who's doing these reviews, but it's really nice. I'm like, who did that? And you, it was so subtle the way he talked about how it was going into the next book. I don't know if you picked that up or not.
Well, I haven't had time because I was, dealing with editors yesterday, but I'll take the time to go back and do some of that stuff.
Let me see. Let me see if I can just look it up real quick. It was because I'm thinking, why isn't anybody like mentioning this, part of it? And let me see here. And it was just beautiful. Let me see. He's talking about your Renaissance man. And he embraced transcendental studies, leading to an MBA and a PhD. Then a personal trinity of women shed new understanding of science and spirituality while frequenting his favorite bookstore, Shakespeare and Company, in Paris. Lacasse's stream of consciousness thrusts him suddenly into the presence of the 13th century theologian. Both now and the 21st century, their conversation over coffee plummets. Well, propels John from Dill's danger into a new destiny. And anyway, there was a part before that. I just love it because the destiny is just so beautiful,
Well, yeah, we just finished up with the Destiny. Yeah, we just got that. It's amazing. Well, that's great. I mean, that's great. So obviously, whoever's running that stuff, which I have to go find, has a keen understanding of what we're talking about and has a feel for it. The feel is what's important. You've got to feel it and understand it and so on.
I don't
But,
know who did this. I really don't know.
I don't know either.
Yeah,
Well,
I didn't
there's a lot of, I mean, there is stuff out there that's out there generally
know.
about me on being a Renaissance man and so forth, that was done by a publicist. But I think that people that are reading it will probably, reflect back on some of that stuff. I know. I don't know. I don't know.
Well, it
I mean,
depends on.
I got one. I mean, I'm getting people. I'm getting. My phone number must be published someplace because I'm getting people that are saying nice things about me. They're coming in on the back of a phone number, with no name, and stuff like that. So I don't know. Anyway, thank you all for all the nice stuff, and this next book, Floppy Feathers, you will not be disappointed. Because it's the story of the very woman I'm talking with right now. So,
And well, they might be thinking, why do I need to read that?
oh, you'll figure it out. That won't take long.
Who's got time for that? But it's, whether you know who I am or you don't know who I am, the book stands alone as just a beautiful journey to love.
That's what it is. That's exactly what it is. It's your journey. As I saw it, I mean, it's your journey, you know, the world, the merrily according to John. But, but you know, it's true. It's all worked out.
Everybody should treat themselves. You should definitely treat yourself, you know, to a really, when I say worthwhile, I don't mean worthwhile. Like, there's a lot of good authors who are writing good works, you know, and of many books, there is no end, and we will not know of all of them. You know, I don't know of all of them, but if one of them comes into your view, you should probably consider it. We've talked about that before.
Yeah, I think you owe it to yourself as a human being, as a thinking stack of protoplasm, you know, to take advantage of this stuff, because that's the gift that you have. The gift is your capacity to project, to think about the future.
Right.
You know, with the exception of instinct, we're the only things that can do that. You know, instinct will move birds and back and forth and animals around and so forth, but their hair grows short and long, not because they're thinking about it, because that's what happens. And we have it one step further, which makes us a more perfect being, and yet I think hopelessly more flawed in many ways. So I think that that's, you know, I'm rambling, but I think I'm good at rambling. I can, you know.
You know, I had an interesting post on Facebook this morning. One of my friends posted it, and it was pretty long. It was very, very long, as a matter of fact. But I wouldn't go through the whole thing. But basically, you know, it's talking about biblical, you know, biblical tellings of what is to happen, what's coming in the future. And it gave like a map, and it gave, you know, obviously cities. You know, there are cities. Listen to this. Nineveh. There's Nineveh, Texas. Nineveh, Missouri. Nineveh, Indiana. Nineveh, Ohio. Nineveh, Pennsylvania. Nineveh, Virginia, New York, and Nova Scotia. There's a Salem, Oregon, Salem, Idaho, Salem, Wyoming, Nebraska, Missouri, Kentucky, and South Carolina. So they're talking about this eclipse that's coming up here on the 7th. And how the it's part of a three-part eclipse series. And the first one was in 2017. I'm like, holy cow.
Wow, how about that?
That's right.
The alignment there, huh?
Yes. So much in 2017. Blows my mind. It says, from the start of this three-part eclipse to the end, it will be 7 years. God uses numbers a lot to communicate with us, and seven has a ton of meaning. A few examples are, he created the world in 7 days. There will be a seven-year tribulation, and seven is used for completion. So in my dreams, I can tell, like, you know, there's times I have dreams and there's times I have visions, you know, something's being told. And one of them, it was so vivid that a slot machine with all sevens came up. Not knowing what that meant, but it's a 777. And yeah, it's definitely been following me. So anyway, he just goes on to explain about the eclipses, and says, and the point where it crosses the 2017 eclipse to mark the center of the X is an area in southern Illinois called Little Egypt. What is even more fascinating about this is that Little Egypt is sandwiched in between two other cities called Alpha, Kentucky, and Omega, Illinois, both having the 2017 eclipse come from over their cities. Can you imagine? It's like, and this is the kind of stuff that's just fascinating. You know, whoever did this work, I mean, I can't deny it. I can't confirm it. I didn't do the work. I don't know. But I find it fascinating. This is the kind of stuff that's going on around the world where, I don't know, people's calling is being, you know, elevated to educate humanity. And that's your book.
Well, yeah, I mean, what you just read to me is it's like part of a scientific process. I mean, that's how you, to me, I mean, from my perspective, that's how you do phenomenological research. You know, is you get all of these things, whatever they are, and you start to connect the dots. Now, what comes of it, is anybody's guess, because at some point you have to move the needle, and sometimes the needle never moves. And that's the, again, it's a part of the scientific process. It either works or it doesn't work. But what people I think tend to do is to put too much leverage on the value of science. And I'm not going to take anything away from science personally, because I am a scientist. But on the other hand, I think that we need to pay attention to things like what you just read, which are very interesting in their coincidental format, if that's what it is, or their designed format, which is probably what it is in its own way. So yes, I think it's quite interesting, frankly.
Listen to this part. It says, why would this be of any significance? Well, to me, it reminds me of how Jesus said that his return would be like a woman in labor, with the signs of his coming growing stronger and closer together. We are at a point in history where we are seeing all the signs that he gave us happening before our eyes. In fact, we are even seeing things that will happen during the tribulation get set up now. If we are seeing those things being set up now, that must mean that we are super close to it actually happening. Going back to God saying that he uses the sun, moon, and stars to show us signs, and then Jesus says that the signs of his coming will be like a woman in labor. Well, this information leading us back to Exodus, explaining that the Hebrew woman have labor fast is so interesting to me. Could we be on the brink of the rapture and the tribulation? So, what is so fascinating to me as he's writing that is for me to produce the game was literally like labor, and it took 7 years. I mean, like I told my, nobody will ever know what I went through to write that book.
Well, again, you see, that's the alignment of seven, and I'm listening to it, with fascinating. But being the other side of that coin, what I would say to that, if I were to be, in the audience, or in the correction booth, say, wait a minute, is that time is a distortion of mass, or mass is a distortion of time. So just in our galaxy alone, you're looking at 92 billion light years. Of the universe, 92 billion light years as a function of time. In our conversation right now, we're tying that down to a period of time that can be measured in months or years. And I think that's a huge mistake, frankly, from a examination point of view. I think what we do as a human being is our mind is that we try to find relationships that we can get our head wrapped around, believe it. And so we see things going on, and they tend to be sort of aligning up with what else is going on. But as soon as you start to relate that to time, then you have this. Then you're in a time violation practically, because the times are dropping differently, and what you end up in the middle of this time violation where time really doesn't exist. And then all of a sudden you figure out, well, wait a minute, I can't in my lifetime put enough zeros behind the number to get it right. I can start writing zeros behind this number, and I could write until I'm dead. I still wouldn't have enough zeros. So what is the time frame? The time frame is infinite. And this is it's I think it's like a pulse. It's like a pulse. The universe is almost like a breathing being.
It is.
It's breathing. It's like it's coming and going. It's whatever it's doing. The frequencies, the wave, the waves, the whatever, the stuff that people think about and feel. And I think for us to try and tag that is a complete folly. It's
Well,
interesting. It's interesting.
right. Well, we
But
can, you
that's.
know, we're trying to remember things like happenings in our own life. Like, you know, what was the time frame that this was happening? Like for me, it wasn't actually 7 years. It was 6 years from the time I started writing it in 2017 till the time I published it. And there were so many hiccups in between. It wasn't all writing. It was a lot of detours, you
Still
know,
part of the
of,
process, though.
oh my
Still part of the
gosh.
process.
No, but they were like purposeful detours, you know, like barriers that was like trying to stop me from getting this book out.
It's still
And
process, isn't it? Isn't that process?
I guess so. Yeah, I guess so. But when 2020 hit and we were locked down, I literally felt like this dome just come over like everything. And we were locked in. And I literally felt like I needed to sit down and finish that book. And like the whole world was going to come to a stop until it was done. That's how it felt.
Well, if we weren't wrong, the
No,
world
and
did
just
kind of come to a stop.
yeah, it really did. And I mean, I would be literally in labor. I would just be laying in bed and tossing and turning, and I couldn't sleep, and I'd have to get up and be like, okay, all right. It'll be in the middle of the night, and I just open my computer and just start writing again. Until I couldn't write anymore. I'm like, I'm tired, I have to go to bed. It was just this constant weight and pushing.
Well, I think that in the, and now I think what's happened, I think people will eventually catch on to what I'm about to say. And that is that I think that the game, your book, essentially is a breviary for life. It's the kind of, it's to be used, just like a breviary. It's not a, in other words, the book is never abandoned. It's never read and then discarded. It's the kind of book you don't throw away. It's just like a breviary. That's why I think you should bind it in leather, because I think it's a keeper. It's a keeper book. It's you know it's it qualifies to be like the Bible, same thing. All the holy books. It's a contemporized version of a message that I believe stands the test of time. You know, use that phrase, and I think it's a breviary. And I think that's, you know, it's the kind of book that people keep with them, carry with them, refer to, so forth. You know, you might even come up with an edition that's smaller. You know, it's not as large, maybe an edition that's pocket size or something. So you can become Captain Billy's whiz bang, you know, in my pocket. Let me look at the game, see what it says.
I can make an ebook, I suppose, but I don't know. All in good time. I'm enjoying the ride.
I think well I agree with that. I think I agree with that too. That's keeps you sane is the on good time thing keeps you sane. And I think that's good because if you try and do everything at once, you won't get done. And so I think you're right. I think you're right. But I think without, you know, saying too much, it's none of my business. I think that your book needs to be accessible instantly, in other words, immediate. It's got to be an, it's not the kind of book you put in your library, although you might store it there, but if you do, it's a mistake. It's the kind of book that you have around you within 23 inches of your brain at all times, so that you could reach out and touch it and open it up. And so that book comes in many forms. And I think it's again, it's the game is to be used, not necessarily read, and it's a breviary. It's something you consult every single day because I don't care how long you live, you're not going to get it right because you're human. You get close, but you'll never get it totally right. You'll fall off the wagon dozens and dozens of times, you know.
Yeah, and every day you're missing out on the beauty of what could have been because you're still trying to figure it out.
Well,
You know?
got it. Yeah, but I mean, if you're at least doing that, you're ahead of the game. You know, if you're at least trying to figure it out, you're ahead of the game. I mean, that's you're talking about me now.
What do you mean?
Well, listen, I am a perfect person. I was having that conversation with Christine this morning out, sitting in the back, enjoying coffee and sunshine.
Nice.
And we were just talking, just sitting talking. In fact, we were talking about the game, as it turns out. And she wasn't talking about my book, she was talking about your book. Wait a minute, wait a minute. Me here. I wrote a book too. Yeah, I know, but I'm not reading your book. I'm reading Marilee's book. Okay.
Well, all in good time, so get there too, you know. You've got to cover them all, but where is she at in the game? Do you know?
I have no idea. I don't look over her shoulder. I just notice her reading it. I mean, she sits down and she looks and she holds it up. She's a voracious reader. I mean, a career librarian, highly educated teacher, travel the world, artist, whatever. She's all those things. And enormously intelligent, so forth and so on. And she's just fascinated by the game, fascinated by it.
Love it. I love it.
And so, I mean, it's, I mean, to have somebody like her pick up on it and tell me, author of five books, John, yeah, I'm not reading your book, I'm reading yours.
The difference between the two books is that your book is, I mean, it's just a beautiful telling of a story. You know, it just is, it's inspiring. It gives you hope. It's, you look outside the window and go, whoa. Like, you really have to do a double take and see what the heck's been going on in the world, you know? Where my book, it's about you. It's literally, it's introspective. It's, you're reading it and you're like, it's like looking in a mirror.
Yeah, of course. Absolutely. That's why you need to hang on to it,
Right. That's why it's so
Right.
fascinating.
Right.
Because it's like,
Right.
wait, you're looking around going, who's watching me right now?
Right. Yeah, no, your book's a keeper. My book could end up being toilet paper, but yours is a keeper.
No, not even. Not even. No, because it's the support. It's like the pillar for it.
Well,
It
the
really
second, I
is.
don't, I mean, I think floppy feathers should be kept forever. But Neil's Danger Destiny is like, so, it's just a, but it's a, but it's a pretty, it's a great introduction. I read the introduction. I read How We Met again in the writing of Deals. And it was fascinating because it underwrote the feelings going forward. And here we are. I mean, we're talking on a public forum, but. But it was dramatic and mind bending, very mind bending. How, and this gets back into the back into quantum theory again, that you and I mean, it's Schrodinger all over again. I mean, it's he invented superposition. Schrodinger invented it, and we are proof of concept of what he was trying to figure out. And 100 years ago, they couldn't quite get there. We have really and truly lived the prospect of a successful distortion of Schrodinger's equation. It's wonderful. And I don't think anybody's going to care. But I saw it. I
Well,
saw
you
it.
saw it because you're studied, you know,
Yeah.
but I mean, we've got a lot of people who aren't readers, you know, and they wouldn't know what you're talking about. There's no frame of reference. So for those who, you know, don't read, the movie's coming.
Yeah, Back to the Future is going to be here again. I don't know.
But you know what? I finished my chapter for Cracking the Rich Code.
Good for you. Good for you. That was difficult, I'd imagine.
You know what? I was thinking that I needed to do more edits than I needed to. So last night when I opened it again, and I told you I had like 3,200 words, right? And when I read Jim's email again, it was 3,000. I was like, oh, shoot, I gotta cut this down a little bit and tighten it up. Of course, I mean, he would give me what I need. In any case, I was reading it, and No, there was only like a little bit of polishing, and I'm like, oh, no, this is good. So yeah, I'm happy with it. I have to be happy with it, you know?
Well, I yeah, sure you are. I mean, it's
Yeah.
I don't find anything about you that's positive surprising. You know, I'm not surprised that you're doing well, happy, did a good job, you
Yeah.
know, are getting courted by someone because you're good enough that they're gonna let you, if anybody gets a mulligan, it's gonna be Marilee, don't worry. If she wants more, give it to her because she's making us great. She's the face, you know. I mean, let's crack the dress code. I mean, look, how many times you been in there anyway? How many times you been in cracking the dress
Four.
code? Four times, okay. You've been in cracking the dress code four times. That makes you a four-time New York Times best-selling author,
International, yeah, best-selling
international.
author.
Yeah. You've been awarded international fame. I mean, you've gotten
Yeah.
awards that say international on them.
Right, for the
Yeah,
game.
international impact.
Yeah.
I mean, those are two words that are interesting, big and strong. International impact, big and strong.
Right.
You know, big and powerful.
Yeah.
And I think that's,
That
I mean, that's people see you that way, big and powerful.
you know, and here's the point of my chapter in this volume. The title is To Love and Be Loved in Return. And you know, when we think of cracking the rich code, in the beginning it was all to do with money. You know, how do you get rich? You know, and all these business people are telling you know, what they did to get rich.
Yeah, that
And
becomes the
some
hook,
people,
sure.
yeah. And so there's a lot of advice and a lot of money talk in some of them, and some of them not so much. A lot of them are not. It's more heart-based and spiritual. And so my chapter, you know, talks about us. It talked about, you know, what when I committed to just be loved, just do that, nothing else. Don't worry about anything else that you're going to do in this life. Just make sure you're committed to love. So whatever came my way, you know, I had to practice that. And you know, obviously a lot has happened since then. And I have, you know, a lot of accolades and successes, and you know, when I first wanted to be an author, you know, when I told somebody I was writing, I had no clue. I had absolutely no clue what I would write. And you know, nothing. And then here I wrote the game. And that's how God works. And so, you know, just writing a book to me was like, wow, you know, I actually did it. And not only that, but then somehow or another, I became worthy of you writing a book about me. I mean, that's the epitome. Who, I mean, like what? I'm just living my life. I'm literally just making sure that I love every day. And now I have this wonderful book that talks about me because of you. You were brought to my life because of that, John. I firmly believe that.
I think it needed to be written. I believe that, and I believe that, like I said before, I've said this before, I'm not the one that wrote the book. The book needed to be written. The cosmos realized the book needed to be written, or that you had to be exposed in a way that makes sense to who you to your power to who you really are. I believe that's true. I believe that your constant being self-effacing about who you are or who you're not, or who you're, or how you're not worthy, or whatever it is, you know, becomes funny after a while because you are, you know, incredible. You're just incredible. But it's hard to say that about oneself. You know, hi, I'm incredible. But you
I'm
are.
Mrs. Incredible.
You know, it becomes, you know, a comedy on, you know, on Fox or something. But it's so we did it in a different way, or I did it, and you know, with your permission, you know, I did it. And I'm sure others will go before me and after me. It'll do a better job or a different job or whatever. But I don't care. We
Okay, but
wrote the
that's a
platform.
good point. That's a great point, John. They can only write to their capacity. You know what I mean? Like, for example, with Craig's book, which is amazing in itself, but the Knowing Marilee book, completely different. He's writing to his capacity as he knows me, his one-on-one experience with me.
Yeah.
And so are you. And the books are night and day.
Well, that's the beauty of being human, I guess, that we have a lot of room in our brain to do different things.
Yeah.
Yeah, because I,
That's
yeah, I don't, well, I don't, yeah.
no, but you've been all over the world. You've studied, places that most people have never seen. The depth of your knowledge, just your whole life was meant for this book.
Yeah, I guess so. God, you write this down.
Yeah.
I mean,
And
what I find, I'm not gonna, you can't, I mean, you just can't load me up with credit like that because there's too many people like me in the world. But I got lucky and got, I got under the frequency somehow. But what I find interesting from my perspective, because of my background, is that I can be reading a Rudolf Steiner or a Erwin Schrödinger, and I can get the alignment. And that's where I think people like me are different, because that's when you use the word capacity. And of course, capacity is kind of an interesting word, because capacity doesn't necessarily mean success. It just means capacity. And we have different capacities, I suppose.
The capacity is experience.
Yes, well, it is experience, but it's experience in a rather relatively narrow track sometimes. But it's still capacity. It's still, if you exercise what your capacity is, you've got it nailed down. And like he had it nailed, he's got his experience with you tacked right down.
Right.
And I have my experience not with you. I have my experience about you. I have my
Yeah.
experience as I see you in this other, as I see you operate. I see you as an operator. I'm almost like an inquisitor who comes along with this frequency dial and say, "Wait a minute, what the hell was that? Come here,
Right. So capacity is really a good subject too. What is your capacity? Because when we're talking about, the experiences you've had, the exposure you've had to so many prominent people, different arenas, in the sky, in the depths of the ocean, I mean, on fast planes and cars and people and money and suitcases and things. It just goes on and on and on. So then we think of Craig, and Craig was walking with me. He was witnessing how I am every day, and then he was learning how to be the same. So now you take that and you go to my hairstylist, who says, "Marilee, I'm going to write a book about you." All I do is sit in her chair. Now, what would make me worthy of, her or inspiring her to write a book about me? What have I done?
Well, that shows, I think, the quality of your being a deity to start with. This is all you have to do is show up.
Well, thank you. But what I'm saying is that, again, we're talking about capacity. Her capacity is literally, I'm in the chair and we're friends, and she cuts my hair every month and does my whatever, and we just talk.
What you're
And the
missing is that
rest of
you
it.
are the capacity. That's what you're missing. Is that you are the ultimate whack of capacity. And as you encounter people, their capacity, if there's some alignment going on there, then their capacity jacks up. You're like a lodestone. Yeah. You're all, you're the amps. That's why she can write a book. She probably can. Because she feels who you are.
Right.
She feels who you are, and
Oh yeah.
therefore, she's highlighted. She's enlightened. She is lifted. She's expansive all of a sudden. And when someone else gets in her chair, she doesn't feel expensive. She just feels like she's doing her job. You get in the chair and she starts to float. Huh? That's why she can write a book about you. You are the walking capacity. I have a lot of experience, but that experience didn't say to me one day, it wasn't writing on the wall, John, today you're going to start writing a book about Mary Lee. No. It was my exposure to you. It was how you highlighted my capacity to say, yeah, that's a good idea. Yeah, I feel pretty good about this. I feel good about this woman. And she makes me feel good about myself. And, I've had a very interesting life. And she's at least tolerating what a badass I am. I wonder why, I am
But
not everybody's friend.
that's literally what you're describing is my tagline when I say find yourself happy with Merrill Lee.
Well, correct.
It literally means like, when you're in my presence, something happens to you.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I
Well,
witness it.
I'm glad I was able to maintain a proof of concept. Yes.
I love that.
So I think that's what happens, is that and whether it's in person or in written form, whatever it is. I mean, Christine's a great example. My wife, Christine. Yeah. Okay. She didn't just jump right on your bandwagon.
No.
Okay.
Right?
But over time, it became clear to her that there was a hell of a lot more to you than she was, allowing herself to understand. And as soon as she did, as soon as she opened up, then it was like Katie barred the door. This is amazing. This woman's amazing.
I appreciate that.
So, and again, there's an enormous amount of experience there. I mean, if you take between the two of us, she and I, there's 100 and almost 200 years of experience, coming up. A lot of experience to say about one person, wow, the wow factor is big, big wow factor. So, I wrote a book about you based on my capacity to recognize your capacity. Craig did the same thing. He did the same thing. Use his capacity to recognize your capacity. In both cases, your capacity overrode our capacity. That's why we have the capacity. If we're talking about capacity.
And that's, but this is the kind of like the hurdle with some people, coming into view, it's the immediate pushback of, I don't see what's so great about her anyway. It's like don't, I mean, don't discard what could happen to you. It's about you. It's not about me. You know what I mean? It's kind of like, gosh, if we say that God is love and we believe that God is love, right? And we come into that presence, then we're immersed in love. And when we are, magical things happen. So it's that when people say, I just can't put my finger on you, Marilee. I just don't know what it is. That's what it is. Love. But it's foreign to a lot of people because it doesn't match what we've been taught to
Well, of course not.
understand.
It's, I mean, love is one of the biggest distorted words out there. I mean, if you go in and just, look at the definitions that fall under Webster, it goes on and on and on and on and on. Again, this is the human mind trying to figure out how to examine correctly and scientifically or in the process of the codices what love is. And they can't, I mean, then
That's why.
you've done it. You've managed to do it, you know, doing all.
Yeah, that's why. I mean, we know that Webster doesn't know God. That's why he can't define it. It goes on and on and on and on and on.
Yeah, I mean, he could have used one sentence and got it right. But I mean, we got to give Webster credit for being a committee. You know, it's a committee. Committees are always, you know, I mean, the Campbell was designed by a committee, so we understand there can be problems. But
Right. So then we fall back on what is love to you? What does love mean to you? It's not of opinion. It's not that. Sorry.
think we should eliminate committees altogether. Is that a big mistake in society to even have committees, councils and committees? It
No,
always.
because I know, but think about it. Then we just have one person making the decisions. That's a dictatorship. And obviously, we don't like that.
At least not around here, we don't. I would think that gosh, you know what? Oh. We do live in a dictatorship, though, really and truly. If capacity, if the cosmos is the ultimate slice of capacity, then the obligation there falls on the individual to tune into that capacity. You've done a job of making that happen, of having people understand their capacity. You are a book about capacity, the game. You're a book about enhancing your capacity. Because if you read your book properly, or if you use it, I'm not going to say read it. I'm going to stop saying read your book. Your book is to be used. Your book is to be used and not to be read. You use it because
It's a
it's a
tool.
manual, it's a tool. It's an absolutely a wonderful tool. And so, yes. I think that if I, in other words, your book takes the self and elevates it to a higher capacity.
Yeah.
Think so? Does that follow?
Yes,
All right.
absolutely.
So if people are reading your book or they are using your book to elevate themselves to a higher capacity, then they become more efficient in their life, their sine wave either lengthens out because it's calm or it speeds up because it's fast, but it's better whichever way they want to do it. They have a better sine wave. They can make better decisions. They will make fewer people angry. They will be just better all the way around. They just will be. We know that.
They
So
have the answer to their problem, whatever it is, whatever
are
the
we
problem is.
eliminate? So does that eliminate the need for counsel?
Yes. And that's been said.
Okay.
Yeah.
So who needs a committee then? It's not a dictatorship. It's all about self. Because
Right.
if you say it's a dictatorship, then that's a policy decision where you will this, you will that. But if people are elevated properly, they don't need any of that because
That's right.
everything is going to become properly.
Right. That's what we're aiming for.
That's the do no harm
Self,
side of love.
right.
Properly.
Self-governance and know what you're doing.
Right.
Nobody gets hurt.
Like you'd meet my friend Marilee properly. Yes.
Right. That's the whole idea. So now, when we are all self-governing and we understand how to do it, we're all happy. We're all in love. I mean, it may sound too good to be true, but the good news is we don't all have to be doing it to experience it. It's just for the one who does my will. Oh, it's just so beautiful.
It's always for the one. It's always for the one.
It's always for the one.
Right. I mean, it's like, I mean, you are, I mean, going back to mathematics again, good and evil, you are almost a mathematical extension of the meaning of life, of the purpose of the universe, because of the way you manage to simplify the tension between good and evil. It's just wonderful. And that's exactly, I mean, that's mathematics. You know,
Yeah.
it's all that stuff. It's
That's
math.
right.
And because of your ability or willingness or because of your capacity, all the words we've used so far, that makes you essentially a genius, I think. You know, you should get the genius award from somebody. So I think that will all that kind of stuff, of course, will happen, and the badges will be on your wall. You've got badges already, but I think for example, in a narrow slice of capacity, what happened to me was I achieved the highest levels of industry, then I achieved the highest levels of education. So I had those mountains conquered, looked up there, turned on, you know, put on my sunglasses, looked around to see the peaks around me. And then I bumped into you, another mountain to climb. And it was, you know, what a trip for me to
Yeah.
struggle to get up there. I mean, it was almost a Sisyphean task. In fact, it still is. It still is a Sisyphean task. I'm still pushing that, you know, like a dung beetle. I feel like a dung beetle. I keep trying to push it uphill. I'll never get it done, but I will. And I'm known for getting things completed.
Yeah.
And I think that that's, and sometimes not with all due caution set aside, but
Uh-oh, I lost you.
you did?
John.
Oop. What?
Ugh.
What happened? Huh. Are you there? One, two, three.
Done. There we go.
Huh. Have I got
I don't
it?
know. It just, yeah, we got it. It just disconnected and then it connected back. I don't know. Something weird.
Maybe I
Good
got it. I don't
stuff.
know what happened.
Heard was, you're getting things done. And I'm thinking to myself, you have this amazing story, not just what you wrote in the book, but you personally have an experience of what, while writing book, how you feel about me, how just, this illumination of, I don't know, revel, write the book.
Well, the whole book for me was a revelation, of course. If you want to use it in the biblical sense, yeah, it was a revelation. And I mean,
Yeah.
it's, you know, it's not the book of Revelations, but it was a revelation. And I was smart enough to take advantage of it, to pay attention. Maybe I had to have all that experience to be able to see it and capitalize on it the way it should be.
That's why you were chosen to write it.
Yeah, I know you keep saying I'm chosen. I was a chosen one. And I think you actually believe that. I write on that as a curiosity, but yeah.
You know, before, something with you, because in real time, I changed the subject just a little bit. Because we're talking about love, what we believe in, biblically. It hasn't served us. I see this all the time. I mean, almost daily. Something, but we don't practice what we believe in. A discrepancy that we are not seeing. And so I'm going to give you an example. There was a post. The post says, "The Bible is very clear about witchcraft and sorcery." Crystals, runes, pendulums, psychic readings, manifesting. Do not play with the dark forces. Do not invite them in. Trust in God alone. So there is, amen, amen. Okay, brother. Yeah, da, 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 da. Right? Okay. So
They
then
must have been on Facebook,
So here's
huh?
where the conversation started because I said, trust God alone. What is God? Because we can't make assumptions. If you're going to tell me all the things that I can't dabble in because it's darkness, but you're telling me to trust God, what is it? I need to know because you're post, you must know. So he comes back and he says, the great I am, the creator. There are no other gods above him. I said, what is the great I am? And he said, the Alpha and Omega, the beginning and the end. Do you think that everything just happened? Does a house build itself? A car, does it build itself? Everything requires thought and action. I said, I don't believe that everything just happened. So if we trust in God alone and believe that everything requires thought and action, what are we to think about and do to prove our alliance? He said, accept Jesus Christ, who was crucified for our sins and arose on the third day, just as he said he would. He is now with the Father, ever interceding for our sins.
Poor bastard. Okay.
And I said, these,
Mm-hmm.
I said, these answers may be the reason why people turn away from religion. I said, religion is not God. And to know religion is not to know God. Until we can define the meaning of God, humanity is subject to religion. There is no unity in religion. And he says, sadly, you're wrong. I gave you the perfect, true, and only answer. I said, I'm wrong. I said, no questions. I said, opportunity lost, thanks to religion. He goes, yes, you're wrong, sadly. Just because it's not what you want to hear doesn't make it wrong. And I said, what exactly am I wrong about? He never,
Wow, this is ongoing.
well, that was
Yeah.
the end. So that was the end of my question. What am I wrong about? But my point is, do you see how defensive he was? And how every comeback he had was just parroting what's in the Bible. There's no original thought or understanding or definition as to what is God. He could never answer the question. Although he claims it was true and perfect, but still it leaves us with nothing. And this is where cognitive dissonance comes. We can't see our ways. We don't understand that there was nothing said here at all to our benefit. It's just literally just parroting the Bible. It's
Well,
unfortunate. That's why we lost.
I mean, you're singing my tune, but, yeah. I mean, the poor. I mean, God. I mean, you don't even have to think about one or the other. All you have to do is, go to Annie, go to the encyclopedia, and figure out how many people have been killed in the name of God. It's ridiculous. Or just look at the current news cycle, figure out. The belief system of two cultures is now killing people, daily in the Middle East. I mean, come on. It's everywhere.
It's just
War.
it, you know, look at, here's somebody else's comment. Amen. Take heed, and if you have, repent, turn away from what God says is evil and turn to God. Confess each occult partaking. Renounce them from your life. Ask for God's mercy and forgiveness. Keep your mind renewed by the washing of God's words. Let God transform you to grow in his righteousness through Christ. Happy is he who trusts in the Lord. What?
Well, if those people are real, I'm going to get myself a robe and a tin cup and let my hair grow. I'm going to go sit in the Bowery Commons Park and start to spout bullshit from the Bible and see what I can get. I'll bet you I'll
I mean,
make a living.
all of these words are empty. They say not, we'd have to literally break it down and say, what does it mean to repent? What does that mean? People can't define that. What they're going to define is like they said, turn away from what God says is evil. What is evil? You can see evil in people's personality, in their behavior, their character, their words, every single day. They're not even recognizing, this guy above doesn't even recognize that he's siding with the devil. He doesn't see it.
Well, I think a sidebar to that to that argument, or to the both of the conversation, is that people all of a sudden when people start to talk about the Bible or about God, they somehow disassociate culture or reality. It's like The Bible is a standalone thing. They don't realize, and I think they forget they can go back to, they'll go back a couple of thousand years and go into the households of Palestine, go into the households of the Roman Empire, go into Hadrian's, whatever, go there and sit down and think in full color because it's not going to be black and white. Think about it. Think about the daily routine of a person in Palestine. And think about the thought process that's going on, because the books and the apostles developed the process of writing about the Bible in that environment. None of those guys were raptured up to write the Bible on a cloud and come back down and give it to the local printing press. They thought and thought and thought in a culture that existed in real time through the evolution of time. And it's a great book. It really is. Got good stuff
Well,
in it.
the proof is, not whether or not we agree on biblical text, who wrote it and when and how they got it and all that. The evidence is shown in the one who cannot define God. That's the one. This person does not even see the discrepancy that he is disassociated, okay, from what the Bible is actually saying. It's almost like, he's exempt. He's preaching, but he's not walking it. Because if he were walking it, he would have asked a question.
I mean, but that's, I mean, check him into Science 101. That's the first thing you learn is that you can't define this stuff. Give yourself a break. People who, I mean, there's no room for literal translation or translation. There's no room in a curious mind for literal translation, because literal translation, people talk about the constants of nature. There's nothing constant about nature at all. Nature is habitual. The universe is habitual. It tends to do things the same way, but it doesn't do it by a rubric dictated by God. It does it through pressure, dark matter, and everything else.
Well, okay, but that's definitely the argument between God and science. When we move the word away from God and we make, then there's a seamless coherence between the two, because love is a
Well, it softens
creator.
it up. I believe you can soften it up with the one in love. I think you can do that. I think you do it very effectively. I agree with that. I agree with that. I agree with that process. But I am flummoxed by how people can be so literal in their interpretation of the Bible. Or for
Well,
that matter, literal in the interpretation of the game. It's not about literacy in that context. It's about use. It's about practice. It's practice.
right. That's why you don't
These
read
are
it.
manuals of practice. Yeah, it's practice. And you've written a book on practice. Perhaps, I mean, God, your book stacked against the Bible. I mean, the Bible is also, it's an also-ran compared to what you've just put together, because you can contemporize what the Bible's trying to say and done it in a way that makes sense to the 21st century mind.
Yeah, it's
And
done
thank
in
you
a
for
way
not
that,
speaking in riddles, God.
right, it's done that everyone can understand.
Yes, as I exhale here,
And bringing us
try
back
to calm
together as
myself down. God.
In this conversation, what?
What?
In our con this conversation on Facebook, when I said there's no unity in religion, it's like his immediate thing is, sadly, you're
we're dropping our signal.
Find truth? Oh, that's too bad. I don't know. Can you hear me now?
I heard you on no unity in religion. I think the religion, I just take the word religion out for a minute and just talk about any gathering of people becomes a political subdivision. It just has to by default. Any gathering, single purpose gathering of people becomes a political subdivision by default. It just does. Religions are not exempt from that. They might be exempt from taxes, but they're not exempt from becoming a political subdivision because that's what they are. And that can vary by blocks, by miles, by ridge lines. You can have one religion on the north slope, and you can have another religion on the south slope. When they meet in the middle at the riverbank, they will kill each other.
Mm-hmm.
That's not what God had in mind, I don't think, assuming we're going to use God as a metaphor.
Right.
But that's what happens. But see, that's exactly what happens.
Right. Right now, this conversation between me and this other person exposes the truth in such a grand way. The fact that he got offended just by me, immediately that put him on blast. Like, what do you mean? You're supposed to just, you know, it's true for face value. Just agree with me. But I'm literally not challenging him. I just ask a question. What is God? You know, it's if you believe all this stuff, you should be able to answer my question so that you.
Well, but
all of us.
But in their context, you know, they are living. I think people that follow it in that the talk like that are living in the graphic examples that are written in religious literature. They're, you know.
Right, but I. Mean, I
honey, your signal's dropping fast.
Hi.
I don't know. Move. Move to the other side of the.
I don't know.
Do something different.
What about that? What about that?
I can hear you now. Yeah, no? I can. No? I mean, you'll drop out and your sentence will just all of a sudden stop. Uh-oh. I don't know why.
What about now?
Yeah, I can hear you now. Yeah.
John?
Problem is, you see, when I can't hear you, I can't tell you I can't hear you.
Right, exactly.
And so we're subject to the technology, whether we like it or not.
Exactly.
Because the technology takes away the decision-making process. Because when you stop, I'm disallowed from telling you that you're not speaking.
Right,
and
exactly.
You come back and start speaking again, then I can tell you. But I can't bring that back.
Right.
You see.
Yeah, okay. So what I was saying was that what the point that I'm trying to make is that there's no self-awareness. This person is lacking in self-awareness. He doesn't understand that, number one, you got offended by me asking a question. That was your opportunity to educate more people. If you have a strong stance in your belief, then educate us. Don't just parrot things. Help us to understand. But he got offended. So now he's going to push back on me and challenge me. So when I said there's no unity in religion, he could have come back to say, what do you mean by that? But instead, he just says, sadly, you're wrong. So
don't give the guy credit for being Socratic. I mean, you know, whoever it was, I mean, that's a Socratic method. It's legendary, you know, practiced by Cicero in the Roman Forum. I think we were talking about capacity earlier.
Right.
You know, there's a capacity problem here for sure.
Right. But he is on this podium, right? He's a warrior for God, not understanding that he's contrary to the message. This is
by saying a warrior for God, you are contrary to the message right out of the box.
Right. Well, you know what I mean? I mean, I could be a warrior for God, you know, just a warrior for love, right? So you're an advocate for love. And he doesn't understand that he's not advocating for anything other than telling the rest of us who are, you know, put off by religion, just more evidence why religion continues to be a problem. There's no love in this conversation at all.
So I live about two blocks from a very large Catholic diocese. that I'm going to believe does probably pretty good work in the community. A lot of people show up there on Saturdays and Sundays. A lot of cars. The neighborhood gets chock-a-block with cars. And I'm going to believe that the whoever the Monsignor is, whoever's running this place, and whatever, do good works. I mean, they're human, so they're also flawed. I get that. And on the pedophile, scale, they had some problems there too. So I mean, that's all there. But I think they believe that they're doing their best to make people comply and be happy and whatever. They don't have any authority to change anyone's direction other than by their stories. That's their authority. They can disallow you from meeting the kingdom of heaven with rules and regulations. If you do the following things, you'll be thrown out by God. You will be whatevered. I noticed that yesterday. I just happened to go through something on YouTube, and there was a guy whose story was, I died and went to heaven, but God rejected me for just one item. And he's talking about that. He's got following. So people want to know what the one item is that God rejected him on when he went to heaven.
Oh
You
my
know?
goodness gracious.
Okay. So, yeah. So let's see. What's your score sheet on mortal sin versus venial sin versus going to confession versus the Eucharist of Christ versus so forth and so on, da 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 da. All designed to keep your ass in line. Okay?
Yeah. It's so funny
Not
to me.
interested. What?
Because don't they say, just don't talk about politics or religion. We always
Yeah.
do. It's like we didn't hear anybody
Oh,
say that.
well.
Oh gosh. Well, it just the argument stands that religion is not teaching us how to love. It's dividing us because the moment, he says the one and only God, there's only one God. Well, you better know what that means.
But I don't want to tag this guy with religion. I mean, I think it's not fair to religion. Tag this guy. This guy is a metronome. I don't want to tag religion to him. I bet you that if I went up to Monsignor so-and-so and showed him the stuff, he would just roll his eyes and say, "Why, come on, you know." I mean, the Monsignor or the priest, whoever he is, will be smart enough to read this and say, "Oh, come on, you know, that's not right." I mean, there are very sophisticated people in religion. I was there for a long time. I went to parochial school, K-12, high school, and the university, all under the flag of Roman Catholic Church, plus a few others, of course. All right, go on. I'm sorry. I'm going to be quiet
Well, no,
now.
but yes, of course, he might agree and go, this is no, he's off base, right? Okay, intelligent priest. That's fine. But let's just point to the masses of people who are just like that. They just don't understand that if you don't understand the definition of love, simply put, if you keep getting offended and have to defend your religion and say that there's only one God and not know what the one God is, and then denounce everybody else's ability to choose their own religion, it's pretty arrogant.
But I think that's the secret sauce of the evangelical movement. They figured it out that
What?
you could keep it simple by following literally this book, which means they don't have to think, the book's already there, and make it sacrosanct. And that's evangelicalism, if I've ever thought of it. That's what it is. That's the one thing I like to the defense of the Jesuit order, for example. You can't be a Jesuit priest until you've been to school in their process for north of 17 years. You can walk around as a mister, but you cannot be a priest. I was taught by those guys, and I got to give them credit for being damn smart. They're very educated. So I got lucky in that regard,
Well, not to say that they aren't educated, but the question to me remains, if they're so educated, why were we not taught how to love? Why is that not the
Well,
priority?
because this process was distorted. It was distorted by The process was distorted by process. I guess that's what it is. Because if you go down to the very beginning, it had to do with control. It just had to do with control. I mean, if you talk about the history of the death of Christ, that was all about control. If you talk about Herod killing all the babies in Bethlehem, that was about control. They didn't need this interloper guy coming up and taking a piece of their deal. It didn't work, you know? It's territorial. It's a territory dispute. There's this guy with sandals walking around Palestine, and he's talking about, some other thing coming from someplace else. What is that thing? Or people talking about a star, saying about there's going to be this guy who's going to arrive and da 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 da. Well, then kill everybody. I don't want this to interfere with our political process. We need to build another viaduct. I want to get that done. I mean, some asshole telling me what to do from the star seed, whatever it is. All that's process. That's the flaw of the human condition. That's the frailty of the human condition, I think. I think. But we can work. We can work around that. We can work around that. It's doable. It's doable. I mean, even the guy that was attacking you because you're dead wrong, I think there's hope for this fellow. There's hope. Give him his due, whatever that is, and lead by example. I mean, I think he'd be just as much fun at the church picnic as anybody else if he could throw a ball or pitch a, a horseshoe. Might be kind of fun. Even though he's stupid as a dog, as dumb as a stump, that's okay.
So again, the ideas of this human being are twisted because there's hope for him. There's hope, right? And he might be able to play ball. But here's the thing, hope in what respect? Because a closed mind, he thinks he's right. He's just dead set, and he basically slammed the door on me and believes he is right in his stance without question. And it's like, wait a minute, open the door and just let's talk about this for a minute. What is your definition of God? He doesn't have one. If you don't
But
have one, you can't believe in it.
of course, of course. I understand. I mean, I intellectually understand what happened. And so the only thing that can happen with a person like that or that organization, I don't want to use the word cult, but that group, whatever that is to allow them under the First Amendment of the United States, because it doesn't happen everywhere, to say whatever they want to say and to not react to that necessarily in a way that causes them to even become worse. Instead, we just lay back and become Socratic. He was so tipped over, he wouldn't even didn't even understand the Socratic method, which is, what you're brilliant at.
Well, the thing is, he doesn't know about that.
Didn't,
If
well, I know
he,
I'm just because I'm using the Socratic method. I mean, it should be natural. It should come natural if you're studied.
it
It should
doesn't.
be natural.
Right, it doesn't. So that's it. That's the narrow mind we have here. So this person here got offended, shut me down without questions, and there's no opportunity for education. So he's going to miss out on the beauty of the game. He doesn't need it.
But he doesn't he doesn't need it, nor does he believe it, nor does he want it, because it's written by an infidel. You're an infidel as far as he's concerned. You should be eliminated. Welcome to the Crusades.
It's just so unfortunate. You miss out on the gift. It's your gift. It's not a sale of a book.
You see, all the great people, Muhammad and all of them were, in a cave someplace. I mean, I think that's why Plato did such a nice job with the cave, is that all these great people become enlightened in isolation. And that's why, we think that we should meditate, because we elevate ourselves somehow in isolation, because our brain isn't being pummeled by too much activity. And I think that these people, I mean, I know people that carry the Bible with them, literally carry it with them and read it whenever they're not doing anything else, reading the Bible. Well, I believe that that's a book to be used. There's no doubt about that. The problem is that they're, in my opinion, they're misinterpreting what they're reading. or they don't give it any historical significance. And I tend to place historical significance on everything because I think it is influenced by history, is influenced by time, influenced by pressure, all that stuff influenced. You know, what's the influence going to happen during this eclipse? This is going to represent some influence.
Definitely.
You know?
Definitely.
So there's influence everywhere. What we don't know about, it's interesting, is people keep talking about dark matter because of the way the universe is configured. And somehow dark matter is the cohesive force for everything. Well, could that be God? Yeah, certainly could be. It's hard to think about God in terms of dark matter that I can't see. I mean, that's a contradiction of terms right there. So God is the ultimate contradiction. I'm willing to, I'm willing, you know, I mean, if, you know, my problem is that I'm not well suited for what you do. I'm very well suited for seeing something and dealing with it and projecting it. I can project it quickly. My problem with in conversation routinely, a personal problem I have, is I'll be sitting down with someone and they'll start to talk to me. And after about the first, I don't know, 7 seconds, I got the conversation nailed. I'm way out ahead of it and I'm to the next thing.
Yeah. Right.
And I've been told repeatedly, why don't you just, can you stop getting out ahead of everybody? Can you just stop that? You know?
Yeah.
And then I say something really cool, like you're just boring the shit out of me, you know?
Right.
That's not fair. Right. I'm not being fair to the capacity of the person who's trying to talk to me.
That is the truth.
I need to just slow up.
But that's a lot of people who have a natural curiosity to learn things. And they're doing that. And then they talk to somebody who doesn't have a natural curiosity to learn. And they get boring really fast. You know, really fast.
Really fast.
Yeah.
Really fast. Really, really fast.
Right.
But,
and that's.
Yeah.
And that is, you know, in the book. So when we look at the five gates and we're looking at gate number three. Right? Where is their level of intelligence? If it's right, if you're in the first gate, you're going to get boring really fast. And it's, you know, and then it's next. Right. And unfortunately, if we don't really understand, like let's say we're talking about the Bible.
Yeah.
The Bible, it teaches us so much. There's so many, tools in there, I'm going to say, to help us with what it is we're looking for, whether it's science or whether it's law. But the whole book is about love and money. The whole book can be divided by those two things. There is nothing else. So if you're not getting the message from the whole text and you're just, you know, trying to memorize, you know, scripture, you're missing the point.
Yeah. I think because I don't, yes, you can't take anything, including scripture, and call it absolute. It's like talking about the constants of nature is just another thing in the flow of time. And it's a process that works until it doesn't work. And then you rethink it. And that's the way everything is because everything changes. I mean, everything changes. Everything is reactive, literally reactive. There are no other options.
Yes, but that's science. So when we look at the Bible and we split it by the two rooms, right? There's the room of money and then the room of love. That's what the book is all about. So when we're studying things like law and science, math, it's all in the book, but it's all in that money room. So until you can,
but you still have to give yourself the option to examine not only that it's in the room, but what is its impact in the room? How much of the room does it take up?
Well,
Not just that it's in the room, it has an impact in the room also, because it's still moving. It didn't become inert because it went into the room.
no, but where do you want your experience to be? Limited to the room of money, which seems, very expansive, or the infinite of love. That's where I want to be. That's where the
Well,
magic
of
happens.
course you're right. I mean, you're always right when it comes to stuff like that. But I keep falling back, I mean, if you're walking on the sidewalk, I'm always walking in the gutter. I get that. I know that. But I still think I have a voice
You do.
in stuff like that,
You
I
do
do.
because you can explain the money room in depth because you have a lot of experience, not with quote unquote money, but what that room represents.
Sure, I do. I have a lot of money. I mean, so that's what I'm saying, is that it's not just the money room itself, it's what is in the money room and how does that
Right.
impact? Because
Right.
sometimes, I mean, the money room could get so crazy that it could knock the wall out and start to bleed into the infinite room. And then
No.
infinite has to do something about that.
No.
It has to, then get out from
No. Nice try. Nope. Because you can't be in two rooms at one time. You're either in one or the other. But
Ah, we're back to Schrodinger, aren't we?
yeah. So unless you choose to be in love all the time, by default, you fall to money. So it doesn't matter if you bring the Bible with you in the money room. You can quote scripture and you can be religious and you can believe in God, but if you don't realize what room you're in, you just took the book with you. We've
Well,
been talking a long time. Oh my gosh.
right.
Oh,
Welcome to the
John.
growth of God. Yes, here we go. I
Oh my gosh. Okay, we are way over our hour.
guess we are. Yeah. Wow. Okay.
I'm making up for lost time.
Yeah.
Yeah,
Fine.
because we had it is fun. We had to do a deep dive, and that's the same with my podcast. Like, I sometimes you just have to focus on things and you don't have time.
Yeah, but you're such a pleasure. I love you.
Yeah. Likewise, I love you too.
All
I'll
right.
see you. Okay.
Bye.
Talk to you. Bye.